Company presents The Higher They Fly, a novel by Christopher Hodder Williams, freely adapted for broadcasting by Norman Edwards.
Radio from Captain Crook, Mr. Dawlish.
You've seen this, Mr. Fleming.
Yes, Mr. Dawlish. I have a pretty good idea now what the damage is and what on-the-spot repair work should be attempted.
Greg, as head of the manufacturing company, what's your view?
Fleming is the only engineer available who knows the aircraft inside out and who knows what might be attempted to repair the damage.
Maybe, but it isn't up to us to decide Captain Crook's proper course of action.
Obviously not, but Crook is open to suggestion.
Very sensible of him. But it's up to me as a director of State Lines to ensure that the suggestion comes from the appropriate quarter.
You have talked on the radio to Captain Crook?
I have, Mr. Fleming.
You felt obliged to tell him that, in your opinion, I was in no condition to offer advice?
I'm afraid that's so.
But don't you think that any engineering ideas I put forward might be assessed on their own merit?
The matter of who puts forward opinions to Captain Crook is one of the utmost importance, not to mention the motives for doing so.
But surely, sir, my motives are obvious, Mr. Dawlish.
What are your motives, Mr. Fleming?
The same as yours and mine, Mr. Dawlish, to help Captain Crook in every possible way.
Quite so, Scrivens, quite so. But Mr. Fleming is a discredited pilot.
Oh.
Surely his motive is to make a comeback.
That's totally uncalled for.
Oh, yes, Greg, we all know that Fleming's one of your bright young men.
Look, we're all getting hit up and time's running short. Let's stick to the point.
Very well, Scrivens. Well, my point is that it isn't so much the plan, it's the man.
You pick your own men, Dawlish?
Yes.
You picked Truman?
Yes, and didn't you find him acceptable?
I did, a mistake. So we were both wrong about him, weren't we?
It's by no means clear what happened up there tonight.
Oh, come off it, Dawlish. The captain slung Truman out of the cockpit.
And the man you're asking the captain to trust was also slung out of a cockpit when he lost his nerve and had to let Truman take over.
Mr. Gregg, did you believe the report that Truman filed against Fleming?
I had to accept it.
What do you think now?
I think, Scrivens, you should ask Fleming direct. I'm sure he'll tell the truth.
Well, Fleming?
Well, there was something weird about Truman that day. Oh, I admit I handled him badly. As I say, there was something weird about him which I didn't see in time. Well, when I did, he snapped out of it and got us down safely.
He got you down? Well, why him?
Various reasons. I'll tell you later, not now. The safety of the aircraft and ourselves depended on his recovery from panic.
You're asking us to believe that. Well, why didn't you say so at the time?
Well, that is a question which only a psychiatrist can answer.
So we have no proof that you're of sound mind now?
None. Except your own judgment.
Your plan means that if Captain Crook lowers his undercarriage and it fails to lock down and align the wheels, he'll be even worse off than he is now.
Perfectly right, sir. You see, if the shuttle valve...
There's no good baffling me with technicalities. We're discussing a simple decision, yea or nay. If your engineering ideas are wrong, what are Crook's chances of landing his passengers safely?
Not very good.
I mean, are they better or worse than they would be if Crook ditched in the sea or landed on his belly?
Probably worse.
I think Crook would put your plan third and last, within three possible chances.
It's a natural instinct of a captain to follow his own bent. He knows he has a sporting chance of ditching her, but maybe anything up to the odds of 10-1 against. Crook is open to persuasion, but he must be sure that those who advise him on the ground have confidence in me.
Ah.
Yes, and at the moment my reputation stinks to high heaven. And you didn't do much to reverse this when you spoke to Crook on the radio.
Do you blame me?
Well, I'm asking you now to change your opinion.
On what basis?
Experts have been told about Fleming's plan.
Very well, Scrivens. And what's their verdict?
At first, they were doubtful whether the repair job could be done in the air. They're now divided in their opinions.
Well, what do you say to that, Greg?
Nobody has said that what Fleming proposes is impossible.
It's got to be a lot better than possible.
Well, exactly, Fleming.
And you think it is, Fleming?
If there is a man aboard that aircraft who can carry out certain repairs and use the tools available, then... Yes, Scrivens. and my proposals offer a better chance of safely landing that Jet 4 than any other method that has been considered.
I'll buy that. You agree, Mr. Dawlish?
Well, really, I don't know.
Look, Fleming isn't making any promises, Dawlish. We can ask Crook on the radio if there is such a person aboard. The decision will still be Crook's. We're only here to advise him, but we must be unanimous. Will you go along with us, Dawlish?
I withdraw my objections.
Thank you, sir.
We have decided, gentlemen, on the right course. I am, after due consideration, in full agreement.
Good. Then let's go to the radio room and tell Crook.
On the contrary, Mr. Hubb, you're an open book. You'll settle down and marry and rear children until you're blue in the face.
Well, if you know that about me, Doctor, it's a pretty damn depressing forecast. I wonder what you thought of Truman when you first talked to him.
You're predictable. Others are not. I dare say that Mr. Truman might have struck me as immature if I'd examined him at his last medical. But then so do you.
Ouch!
You'll get over it.
You seem to know what I'm going to do next.
I hope so. Do you own a car?
Yeah. Well, why do you ask?
What do you do when it goes wrong? Take it to a garage?
No. As a matter of fact, I like to do my own repairs.
You're a bit of a mechanic, in fact.
In a kind of way, Doctor. Say, I feel pretty silly calling you a doctor. Don't lady doctors have first names?
On special occasions, yes. My name's Dulcie.
Amateur motor mechanics have names, too. Mine's Jack.
Tell me about your practical experience, Jack.
Well, I went up to the auto center while I was in England to find out how to soup up my latest. They taught me one hell of a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, when I've operated on my she-devil, she'll go like a bat out of hell. How predictable is that?
That's exactly what I hoped. Only better.
I don't understand.
Oh, I'm sorry, but it was necessary to make sure. When I was asked to go forward a few minutes ago to see the captain, he told me that he may need a volunteer for a certain purpose.
Ah.
I said I thought you might be suitable. I could tell by your hands that you were used to mechanical work of some kind.
I'll get him manicured. Seriously, you think I could be of some use?
Now that I've talked to you, yes.
Well, what sort of job did the one done?
Go and talk to the captain. He's expecting you.
Right, but I won't try and kid you. I'm scared.
You'd be a bit of an idiot if you weren't.
Hey, you. It's the first officer, Truman, isn't it?
Hmm?
Mind if I sit down next to you and talk?
No.
That little bitch Susan the stewardess won't answer the bell. I want a drink. You want one?
No.
Awful world we live in. You know, we've turned back. Ruined a deal I hope to pull through in Washington. Fact is, I'll be broke. All because of some bug in this aircraft. I just want to shoot myself. You look as if you're fed up with this life, too.
Yeah.
I must have a drink. I must have a drink, my nerves. Susan! Susan! Stewardess!
Susan. Yes, Dr. Rogers. That last drink you took to Mr. Valentine, how did it affect him?
Well, it seems to have quietened him. At least he stopped shouting and swearing and trying to make Mr. Truman talk.
And Mr. Truman?
Oh, that sedative you gave him has almost sent him to sleep.
Is Mr. Hubb still in the cockpit?
Yes, he is. Dr. Rogers, Mr. Perkins told me just now that Mr. Hubb seems to be a bit of an engineer. He says he's volunteered to try to do some repairs.
Do you know exactly what it is he's going to do?
All I know is that they're fixing up a long lead to the radio so that Mr. Hubb can talk to someone at London Airport who will tell him how to make the repairs. Mr. Hubb will be working in number 3 systems bay, so the captain will be able to talk to him too.
That's the tunnel that runs right along the aircraft under the floor, isn't it?
Yes, I think so.
I know there's something wrong with this aircraft, but I wonder what it is and how serious.
Look, the light over the loudspeaker. The captain's going to talk to the passengers.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to listen rather carefully to what I'm going to say. Because you will all know by now that there's a bit of a snag with this aircraft, and I don't want you to get the idea that things are worse than they really are. And that's why I'm going to tell you the facts. As a flying machine, I want to assure you that there is nothing whatsoever wrong with this aeroplane. She's in excellent form. And if we didn't have to land somewhere sometime, there wouldn't be any problem. However, it gets monotonous if we don't come down sooner or later, and we prefer not to run out of fuel before we arrive somewhere. When we took off from London Airport, one of those rare faults occurred to do with the undercarriage wheels, which now means that we are faced with some difficulty in landing in the normal way. I can tell you now that myself and the rest of the crew, together with expert engineers on the ground, have worked out a means whereby the undercarriage can be repaired in flight. I hope you will forgive us for the inconvenience caused to you. We are now going to descend to an altitude suitable for the work that has to be done. Now, it may be a bit bumpy. If any of you feel the air a little rarefied for comfort, you can, as I told you before, obtain oxygen by pressing the red button overhead. It's all free. Thank you for listening. I shall be saying a few words later. That's all for now.
Well, well, I thought you were going to end up by telling them to take their partners for the next dance.
Oh, good heavens, did I ever do it, Jeff?
Well, it might be an idea to play some music over the speakers.
Oh, Perkins. If you walked into your bank to ask for an outrageous overdraft, would you put on a brand new suit? Look, you must never gild a lily, old boy. It makes people wonder why it's so necessary.
I'll remember that. I'm going to need an overdraft pretty soon.
Oh, what?
My wife wants me to buy a house.
Oh, Struth, at a time like this, Jeff, he has to go all domestic on me. Well, Perkins, just don't forget to put the stairs in like some friends of mine did in the heat of the moment.
Oh, very funny.
Fleming will be calling us any minute now, Jeff.
I'll have everything ready, sir.
What about the emergency axe?
I'll grab one from the bulkhead. The one here's too big.
He hasn't come back from the loo yet.
No, he's talking to Susan.
Oh. Dr. Rogers was right when she said he was predictable. Do you think he can do the job, Jeff, in the time we have left?
Well, according to Fleming, Hub faces a hell of a complicated program, including locating the correct place in the flooring of number 3 systems bays and cut through it with an axe.
No mean task, that.
Eventually, if all goes well, he'll tell you when the time has come for you to lower the undercarriage. The moment when there's no going back.
Well, let's skip the details, huh? Now, if we can get the wheels locked down, the job is to get the wheels facing fore and aft.
I've allowed half an hour per side for that.
The bogies are eccentrically pivoted, aren't they?
Yeah, but the slipstream will force them hard up against the stop. See, getting enough leverage is going to be the problem.
So that leaves us with a time problem, isn't it?
Yeah, but we forgot one factor. The extent to which it matters depends on Hub and the capacity of his lungs.
Altitude. The rarefied air will slow him down.
Yeah, and he can't wear a mask. It'll impede him too much.
How much would our fuel consumption increase if we flew low?
Oh, she'd drink fuel like a dried up camel at an oasis.
Wait a minute. Anyway, switch on the intercom.
Yes, sir.
Thanks. Oh, Susan, would you ask Dr. Rogers to come in and see me at once? Thank you.
What's the idea, sir?
Well, if Hub can't wear a mask, there's a chance the doctor can help him.
The Higher They Fly, novel by Christopher Hodder Williams, freely adapted for broadcasting by Norman Edwards.